session number 16711, Fred Welsh, reel 14.
Mr. Welsh, reel 14. When you'd completed or took your foot out of the parcels, what did you do with them?
They were a Red Cross Castle parcel came in a brown cardboard box. Just like a boot box, shoe box, but much bigger. Now, it was kept, it was empty out of the carton. It had come out of a tea chest or a wooden carton, which were kept by me and Camp. The Red Cross boxes were kept because you could pull them to pieces gently, and you could get out sometimes wire clips that were very handy. You kept those in a little tin. The box, we decided that we would make dartboards. And the carton was cut into strips the thickness of a modern dartboard, tacked together again with the clips that had been taken out, the brass wire clips. And it was made yards long, strip after strip, rolled together and rubbed with the soap that the Italians gave you, that we could never, you could never get a lather with it at all. And this was rolled into the shape of a dartboard, and then the wires that had come off the boxes, the tea chest, you went there and asked for a wire to make a dartboard. So you give your wire to make a dartboard, and you're back now to your wire clips. This was put on with your wire clips. Someone, usually somebody knew chemistry, could make colours that you painted. And the dartboard was painted and really rubbed again with this soap and put into soak for days in cold water. And when it came out, you had a dartboard. So you ran a league playing hoot for hoot. And the final would be played in front of the colonel and his family and the captains of the Italians in the concert hall on a Sunday night. And the darts were all handmade, and they were made like the wooden ones that you used to have in fairgrounds. And these were all whittled down and made in, not very good, the first ones. But by the time we'd got to the finals, darts were coming to be pretty good. And before the game was halfway through, the colonel stood up, cancelled the game, and said there'd be no more darts. These men could use these to fight us. They were so good with them. So what happened? The darts league went into a night job. You did that during the night. You came right through all the hoots. If we'll say 24 was playing 54, they came through 25, 26, 27, till they got to 54. Had the dart match with the lookouts at the doors and at the windows. And this take an hour, so total three, and then you went to bed. Of course, there was nothing to get up for in the morning. And there were concerts made, arranged the sergeant major arranged and got sent material through the Red Cross, and he got to have a good orchestra. So he wanted music standards. And he did all the music himself, wrote it all out. Clever man, real good musician, an army major of music.
Do you remember his name?
No, it was a Scotchman. And he used to run concerts. And out of the Red Cross material and stuff that you stole and picked up, wire if you saw lying, you picked it up. If there was a prop, you picked it up. And a stage was made for this man. The Red Cross parcels again, the cardboard ones were used as backcloths and scenery painted by people. And all the colours were handmade by, as I say again, people who knew how to do this. And Sunday night there was always a concert on. But I'm getting ahead of my story. In December, just after Christmas, there was a special Red Cross parcel, and it was Christmassy. There was a little Christmas cake in from this and a Christmas pudding. Well, this was too rich for me, and the lad said, my mate said, well, you'll have to go, you'll have to report, see. And I reported down to medical centre, and I was sent down to see this doctor, who turned out to be a captain out of the South African Army, a medical captain. And I walked up to his desk, and all he said was, put this man in isolation. I had lice, I had crabs, I had anything that would crawl, and desperately ill with dysentery. And I was put into isolation, haircut shaved everywhere, shaved off. I was bald everywhere, under my arms, in the private parts of your body, all cleaned off. And I was put in bed in a isolation ward by myself for about 3 days till they got rid of all this lice. Then I went in the hospital, and I just went down and down and down until I remember the number well, because when the doctor left at night, he used to say, can you keep count during the night how many times you go to the toilet? And between 10 and 5, I would go to the hospital between 16 to the toilet, 16 to 20 times.
What were you passing at the end of that time?
Oh, blood and muscles, just blood and muscles. The lad in the next bed, a sailor, I didn't know him. I didn't know anybody in the hospital ward because I was so ill I wasn't interested. And he died with the same as me. And in the distance I could hear them talking that I was exactly on the same road. I was so ill that when the Red Cross came, they were going to pick a few people to be put on a Red Cross boat and brought home. But I missed out. I wasn't supposed to be ill enough, or I was too ill. I don't know which way they put it, but I never got on. And I was put back into bed. And it went on and on. And all I used to eat was half a cracker with a Marmite on and a little drink of hot Bovril. And these were out of Red Cross medical parcels. Another thing people don't mention, they were sent to the hospitals, and everything was in, like the Bovril was concentrated, for instance, and there was medicines in, and rice, things that you needed for to make you better, convalescent foods. And you always got your parcel, but was taken off me and put in store. And one day we got what they called a bulk issue, and it was from South America. And there was huge 14-pound tins of tomatoes, a huge tin chicken, a tin rabbit, all in one tin, the full thing, and crackers, and great big cheeses, which were cut up and shared. And when the doctor came in at 8 o'clock at night, on my bed was a tin of tomatoes and a tin rabbit.
These bulk parcels came where? To the hospital?
They came into the camp. Everybody got there. It's the only one I ever knew, fortunately.
And what was the ration there? So many bulk parcels per number of people or what?
No, they were just... they shared them out as best they could. You know, one might not get a tin rabbit, but they might get a tin chicken. One might not get tin tomatoes, but they get something else. What you see in cafes, that was the size of them, huge things. And on my bed was these two big tins. The doctor said, there's no way is he going to be allowed them. So believe it or not, I traded them for crackers and cheese. And death now was the thing you wanted, the thing I wanted. And I thought, well, I've heard it said it's supposed to work, so I said, I'm going to eat cheese and crackers till I'm sick. And I ate 66 crackers and about a pound of cheese. The next morning, the doctor came in and he said, how many times have you been to the toilet? And I said, you don't believe this? I said, 14 times, that's all. And from then on, that was the turn, and I got a little bit better. And within a... I went in January, and by the end of March, I always remember a padre came to see me, and he said, if you can hang on, probably the sun will help as well. But anyway, I got better. And I was put out of hospital, but I only weighed 5 stones, and I was supposed to be fit to come out. And the doctor... New Zealander this time, and he was a maternity doctor, really. He says, I know nothing about this. He says, I was just whipped out to the army when I'd finished my education in Australia. And he said, I'm sorry, but he says, you should go out now. He says, you should have nothing but fish and chickens and custards and all the like. But he says, you know what you'll get out there. But anyway, I managed to cope when I got outside. And by now, Porter was waiting on us. And he'd organised his life. He knew where the trades were. He knew who had the cigarettes. He knew what the food we liked. And I also got there a clothing parcel sent from the Durham Light Infantry in Durham, which included about 6 bars of... dark chocolate, Bourneville chocolate, which were really good sales items. Well, I says, I'm sorry, I said, I'm craving for something like this, and I ate 2 bars, just sucked them. And we did get a little bit of food between us, and I shared the shirts and that with Porter. We got one each, and a pair of socks each, and then on it was nice and warm, and I lived in the camp, got into the routine.
You were talking about the parcels, and you were saying how they were used after we finished. In what other ways were innovations, anything you could get hold of, were manufactured? You've mentioned, for example, pots and mugs and so on.
The best parcel, without a doubt, I'm sorry to say this against the British Red Cross, but the best parcel was the Canadian Red Cross.
When did you start getting those?
They came occasionally. Maybe you got one in 6 weeks. But all their items were in quality tins. They were like chrome inside. And that was the first time I ever saw powdered milk. They called it Klim, which is milk in reverse. And that was a lovely tin. The butter was in a good tin. And you could use those for... We used to make teapots out of them, tea holders, drinking mugs, and any other tin, corn waif tins. You used to hammer out with stones and make some sort of knife. It wouldn't cut, but it would spread. And you could occasionally maybe cut something with it. Because you had no utensils except your own army dish, Dixie. But you never had a proper knife and fork. So if you found a broken window, you picked a piece of glass up, because this was handy for smoothing and whittling down sticks to make handles in your pots, to make holders for hot things. People used to make the most remarkable things in the art class out of these milk and Klim tins. One lad once made, and he lived there, the Leaning Church at Chesterfield, out of tins. And they were put in exhibitions. And another lad made a clock which had a pendulum on, out of tins. Another person could make for the Ramblers Association people, could make the most beautiful maps for lectures. If you wish, you could give a lecture on Durham City. And people used to describe the walks in Derbyshire, in Devon, in Cornwall. And they lived there, they knew all about it. So it was an instructive afternoon out. There was German classes, Italian classes. But I could never, as I say, I was so ill in Italy all the time, I hated Italy, that I could never concentrate. Never concentrate on a class, so it was absolutely useless to go. The only thing I ever did, I played in goal for the hut, and I got hurt, and that was it. I never did anything else. And
so there was, you had lectures and talks, which from expertise amongst yourself. It was quite a hive of industry going on inside the company.
Oh, there was always something going on. There was nothing unusual in the summer. About 5 o'clock, you did your siesta round the camp. You walked round the camp. It wasn't unusual to see a great big man come past with a great big beard, knitting. And his mate might be having a bit of needlework. Things that they'd sent for. The mother sent them, just thought, well, I might do this. And that was all.
Was there a camp library? Did you get books?
No, you couldn't. They never got returned, because paper was a high commodity. You couldn't get paper. People used to tear pages out to go to the toilet. Simple as that, use a toilet paper. And all books that came in, your family could send to, I think it was Penguin or one of those paperback companies, send the money, and they sent the books. They weren't allowed to send books. But you got all the rubbish they couldn't sell. You could get one that used to come. It was all over the camp. The life and loves of an earthworm. This was for soldiers. And it was stuck in every parcel that you got. So people stopped sending them, because they just sent. Another one was an Agatha Christie mystery book. Same one in every parcel. It was all over the camp. And if there's a good book, well, there's 100 guys kept it in their hood for a start. And as I say, it was 54 hoods, so you were a long time before you got the good books.
You mentioned concerts, and you mentioned that you had a band on the camp. what kind of productions did you put on?
Well, good musical concerts, because all of the players were military bandsmen, so they were quality players. And we were supposed to have a first-class dance band pianist who was supposed to come from Joe Loss Band in his time, but that was the quality of play I had, and this Sergeant Major was a brilliant conductor, and you could always find a quality singer. I'm not on about any Tom, Dick and Harry getting up to sing. You had to pass the Sergeant Major's test before you were allowed to sing at the concert. So it was a really good concert. And these were, as I say, were Sunday nights. Always Sunday night. And the Colonel and his family were always invited to the front seat.
And what theatre did you put on?
They used to put plays on, which, as I say, I never liked. I never went to plays, but they used to know all the players. As I say, again, there was actors, supposed to be actors who could organise them, and directors, and somebody that had been in the business, probably amateurs, but they knew what they did, and they were always very good. They made their own clothes and everything. I mentioned football. There were 54 teams, and there were 54 different coloured strips. And each one of those strips were made in that hut. Our own strip, we had a red army vest which had been dyed with stuff, and the sleeves had been cut out and dyed elsewhere, brought back together and sewn on, and all the others were just the same. The only problem was you could only wash them once, and then these amateurish paintings and colouring disappeared. They were done with people used to get crayons sent, you know, and paints, and they used to cut them up and make them into proper dyes. I say I'm talking of chemists. Lads who knew what they were doing. And I'll never forget the cup final when the two teams played in the cup final. It was magnificent. The orchestra played on the field first, and then the football match. So I say it was only 20 minutes each way, and there was a cup made out of these good tins, presented by the Italian captain, and then we went into hut and finished the night off the Sunday night concert. Another Sunday night they might have an international football match, Ireland and England, England and Wales, anything. It was always something on. Because you never, ever got a job off the Italians. You occasionally got a mile walk, but you were never allowed out at all. You know, there were very few people went out on jobs that I knew.
Did you have any problem with stealing amongst the prisoners?
We didn't, not in our hood. The only thing that caused trouble, and mine was big trouble, it was a fist fight. And as I say again, people probably don't believe it, but unfortunately, the tin of biscuits in your Red Cross parcel, and they weren't nice or anything like that, they were biscuits that would feed you. And there were 13 in the tin, which is 6 1/2 each. But try to cut or break a cracker, you cannot. And I've seen a fight who got which half of the cracker. And they used to really have rotors. It was my turn to have the big cracker yesterday. And I've seen grown men fight for that. It was that bad when you first went there. Hunger to me was terrible. Other people, there was a little bit of a shop. There wasn't much in the camp. We couldn't. Onions was the thing. And it got into our camp that onions was the thing to eat. You know, that was the thing for your health. And I always remember one lad sold everything he had. And he ate about a stone of onions, where he nearly killed himself, you know. They believe this sort of story. But as I say, and we say it to this day, Tommy Porter and I never once fell out over anything in the parcel. If one wanted seven biscuits, if he was that hungry, he could have seven biscuits. The meat, the spam it was good.
The discipline in the camp, you've mentioned you had an RSM, I think, and then other NCOs.
Yes.
They were in charge with it.
Yes, they were in charge.
This was military discipline, as you've been
used to. Oh, yes. You couldn't wander into Kobos, for instance, and that was bad. Yeah, that was out of there. You, unless you'd seen them, you weren't allowed to try any sort of escape. You weren't allowed to goad the guards. It's foolishly, because, as I say, there's nothing worse than an awkward Englishman. And to get shot for putting your tongue out, for instance, at the guard, or swearing at him, you know. And
did you have a morning parade for counting?
Oh, yeah, that took years, that.
How was that organised, man?
Oh, you went onto the football field, and you counted one, two, three, and it lasted hours.
Why was that?
Why, to me, they just couldn't count, as simple as that. Simple as that. And I remember one occasion when I got a good hiding off a guard. I got a kicking. And occasionally, they would have a search of your camp. They turfed us out about 3 o'clock in the morning. You have to go and stand on parade. And the other soldiers search your camp. Pull it to bits. Like what you say on the telly today, pull the camp to bits. And we were stood from about 3 a.m, it was 4 o'clock, I sat down on my hunkers, I was at the back, and this guard caught us, and gave us a kick, and, you know, before I could get on. And that's the sort of thing you do. When you went back, all these little bits of knives and teapots that you made had been stood on, taken away. Any food left, they would stick their knife in it, and by now, as I say, it was red hot, so it was ruined. You couldn't eat it, you know. Very, very petty. Right, very petty. Never got that in Germany when we were prisoners. Never.
Was boredom ever a problem in the life that you
were leading? Winter time was terrible. You couldn't get out. As I say, it was knee-deep in mud. And you were perpetually cold. Night and day you were frozen. Even the soap never did a thing for you. You had to go to bed at 10. And from then on, all you could hear was somebody trailing to the toilet. His army boots, not fastened, you know. And they went past your bed and he came back again. And he woke somebody else up and he had to go to the toilet. And oh, it was terrible. The winter nights were terrible. You didn't know what on earth to do to put the time in. You had arguments, as I say, you talked about food. Somebody would tell you what they ate down London. You would tell them what you ate up here, what your fancy food was. I could just eat me mother's Yorkshire puddings now. I could eat me mother's spice loaf. Perpetual talk of food.
Did you have any lights in the winter nights?
Lights?
You know, to light up your hut.
Oh, yeah, the lights would run all the time. You'd never put them off to go to sleep. As I say, they were the fear they must have lived under, the Italians, about God knows, must have been terrible for them. And I say it was just their fear, because I've never met a person like an Italian, never.
Were the searchlights around the perimeter?
Oh, yeah, big lights on the top, spotlights. If you moved, you know, they could follow you in the yard.
Were there any incidents or accidents while you were there with people being shot for no apparent reason?
I never heard of anybody. As I say, I've been, one or two got roughed up. You know, as I say, I sat down, I got roughed up for that. If you went on these little walks or you went for a bath, you maybe sidle over to somebody, a guard or a civilian that was passing, see if he had anything to sell. You got caught for that, you would get hit with a rifle, you know, things like that. And there was always about two guards to every soldier, like, you know, when you went out.